A morning. Today's daf from Baba Basra's Kuf Nun Tes. Last daf of the eighth parak of the Masechta. We just did a Mishnah yesterday on Kuf Nun Ches Amud Beis. I'm just going to quickly refresh the Mishnah. We'll do the Mishnah again inside. The Mishnah begins. Nafal Abayis Alav Alimo, the house falls down on both him and the mother. So this is a succession of Mishnayos that started already on the previous Amud. Actually on the previous daf. The Mishnah back on Kuf Nun Zayin talks about the case of the house falling on both the father and the son. And the son has also a bunch of creditors and a wife as well, who also is a creditor. She has a ksuva obligation. She has a ksuva outstanding obligation against her late husband. So the question was, who died first? Now, it's not a question. We don't know the answer. I mean, it is a question, but we don't know the answer of who died first. But obviously, it has very serious halachic consequences in terms of who died first, because then we could be able to follow the estate, whether the estate went from the father then to the son, or whether the estate went from the son to the father. And obviously, it has a lot of halachic consequences in terms of who died first. What happens to the money? So the Mishnah back in Kuf Nun Zayin, when it was a father-son scenario, machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and Beis Hillel's position is nechasim bechazkasam, you keep everything in the holder's possession, meaning chazaka. The next case in the Mishnah that we dealt with was on the top of Kuf Nun Ches. The Mishnah, nafal bayis alav al ishto, so the house falls down him and his wife. So, once again, the order of who died first is going to become extraordinarily significant in terms of where the monies go. In other words, she has a ksuva obligation against him, but that's only if she predeceases him. He has an ability to yarshin her. He inherits her assets, but that's only if he predeceases her, etc., etc. So, what do we do over there in such a scenario? And once again, Beis Hillel says, nechasim mechaz kasam, you keep everything in their state of chazaka. We had a discussion yesterday in terms of what exactly that means in terms of the husband and the wife. We talked about the ksuva, the nichse malug, and the nichse tzom barzel. Please see yesterday's daf for a review of that. Now we're up to the third case of the Mishnayos, which is what we're starting here today, and that is nafal abayis alav alimo, the house falls down on him and on his mother. Now what I didn't do yesterday, because it was at the end of the daf and I was going quickly, is then explain what the scenario in which, if it's him and his mother, so in other words, he stands to inherit his mother, meaning, so who's the other line of succession over here? Who's the competing line of succession? So if you take a look at the Rashbam, the first Rashbam in the Mishnah, I didn't read this yesterday, but now with a little bit of time in my favor, I'm going to read the Rashbam right now. Nafal bayis alav alimo kigon. Shenafal bayis al Rachel, Eshes Yaakov, Ba'amanusa, Va'al Yosef bena miYaakov. So let's say, for example, that the house falls down on Rachel, who happens to be the wife of Yaakov, and on Yosef, her son, V'lo haya od ben Yaakov, and Yaakov didn't have any other son. V'lo mishacher, she'ach shav ta'anoseim shava, she'yershia ha'em kagon achia me'aviha. So let's say now the inheritors of the mother, who in this case are her paternal brothers, Omrim HaBen Mesrishon. So his argument is going to be, now this is her paternal brother, so his argument is going to be, look, my sister, as far as she's concerned, so she died and she did not have a surviving son. Because his argument is going to be, well, first the son died, which means now that she died childless. First the son died, then my sister died, and therefore I stand to inherit my sister. Now any inheritors of the son, meaning if the son himself had sons, or if the son had paternal brothers, etc., etc., Yerusha ben, kigon Reuven ben Yaakov, Meleah towing kol, sorry, Meleah towing kol nechasim, v'omer Rachel mesa tchila v'yerusha Yosef is kol nechaseha, v'achakach mesu v'yerushana kol nechasim. And meanwhile, the son's paternal brothers are going to make the argument, no, first Rachel died, then her son died, and her son Yosef died, and so therefore we stand to inherit everything that Yosef gets. And remember, Yosef isn't going to be inheriting everything from his mother. Okay, so those are the two competing claims. So what happens in this Mishnah? So this is very interesting. Elu ve'elu modim shiachlok. So here we have agreement between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai, throughout all these Mishnahs, has said, divide, divide, divide. And Beis Hillel consistently said, no. Don't divide. Everything stays in a status of chazaka. Over here, however, we're going to see that the money is going to be divided between Yorshe Ha'em and Yorshe Ha'ben. Now, why should that be? So I did already yesterday in the Rashbam, but I'll just say it outside right now. And the reason is as follows. Because previously, we weren't talking about competing claims, but competing claims coming from different mechanisms. Let's say, for example, the first Mishnah. The Mishnah back on Kuf Nun Zayin. There were competing claims, but operating on different mechanisms. It was the case of the father and the son who were in the building, and the building collapsed on the father and the son. So who's competing? The son's creditors against the son's own children. Okay, so there, it's basically a bachov against a yoresh. So a yoresh is a better position. Why is a yoresh a better position? Because a yoresh happens naturally, meaning there is no manufactured kinyan. Yerusha comes through simple act of death. So yerusha is just simply more, what I described yesterday, it's more organic. Well, however, when it comes to bachov, when it comes to a creditor, so he needs paperwork, he needs edim. In other words, there's more required in order for a bachov to get paid back. So if it's a question between a yorish and a bachov, so the yorish is going to beat the bachov. Look at the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah talks about the house falling down on the husband and the wife. Husband and the wife. So yes, she has a ksuva. Claim against him. At the same time, however, his children are claiming a yerusha claim. So once again, it's the two competing claims are not on even par with one another. Here, however, we have a mother and a son. Interestingly, in the case of the mother and the son, Yorshe Ha'em and Yorshe Ha'ben are making claims based on Yerusha. So since their claims are based on Yerusha, now they are literally equal claims one against the other. Equal claims one against the other, and we literally have no way of determining who died in the building first, so therefore, divided. So we have a Mishnah, and the Mishnah tells us that Eilevela Modim Shiach Loku. I'm Rabbi Akiva, and in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva came along and said, Modani Bezusha Nechazim Bechaz Kasam. What do you mean? No, we don't. We're not going to divide the money, but rather it's going to stay in a status of status quo. Now, what exactly does that mean? We're going to see that. We're going to see exactly what that means. But
says, I agree.
Yeah, so the Rashbam is bothered by your question.
That means that you're referring to somebody in that class.
Right. So the Rashbam says that the word modeh over here is just used symmetrically, because since Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel use the word modim, so Rabbi Kiva also uses the word modeh, but you're right. And the Rashbam admits this as well. It doesn't mean he agrees. It means that it's just the language that was used as a method of symmetry. Okay. So Amar Ben Azai. So Ben Azai says to Rabbi Kiva, "Achalukim anu mitzarim el Shabbat lachalek alein osashavim." So he bemoans. He's bemoaning what Rabbi Kiva is doing, because here we have a case study where Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel seemingly are in agreement. At least the way the Tanakhama presents it, they're in agreement with one another. And now Ben Azai says to Rabbi Kiva, "Now you come along and you're saying that they're debating on this case as well." Meaning that no, and we have already enough machlokas. So we have enough machlokas, and you want to now add more machlokas. So Ben Azai is kind of bemoaning the position of Rabbi Kiva, in that Rabbi Kiva, obviously he had some sort of mesorah, but Rabbi Kiva believes that there's a machlokas in this case as well. Okay, so we know there's a shita Rabbi Kiva over here, that in the case where the house falls on the mother and on the son, so Rabbi Kiva says status quo. So now, it only begs the following question. What in the world does status quo mean? Meaning, you have an estate. If we don't know if the mother died first or the son died first. The Yorshe Ha'em are making a claim. The Yorshe Ha'ben are making a claim. And Rabbi Kiva says, okay, status quo. Like, what does that mean? So Becheskas me. So Rav Elam are Becheskas Yorshe Ha'em. So on this, the Amoraim actually debate what is Rabbi Kiva's position. So Rabbi Elam says that it goes to the mothers, the inheritors of the mother. And Rabbi Zera Omer Becheskas Yorshe Ha'ben. And Rabbi Zera says that it goes to Yorshe Ha'ben, it goes to the son's inheritors. Now, Kisalik Rabbi Zera. So Rabbi Zera makes Aliyah. Okay, the number of Amoraim went from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Zera, most famously. So Rabbi Zera makes Aliyah. So Kamashita said to Rabbi Elah. And he changes positions. Meaning, as part of his new learning, meaning he went from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. He learned now, and he's now learning in the yeshiva to Eretz Yisrael. He's learning the same sugya, but he's arriving at a different conclusion. In fact, the opposite conclusion. So he first thought that the Yorshi HaBen should be inheriting, but then going to yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, he then comes to the realization, no, it should be the Yorshi HaEim. And we have in the Gemara the words, Kam Rabba Vishita Seid Rebbe Zera. The Bach takes out that line of the Gemara. Okay. Anyway, let's focus on Rebbe Zera. The Bach says that this last line doesn't belong. Let's focus on Rebbe Zera. Rebbe Zera changed his tune. So, I'm a Rebbe Zera, Shma Mina, Avir de Eretz Yisrael Machkim. So, and Rebbe Zera himself commented, you know, the air of Eretz Yisrael makes people smarter. Meaning, I took a position earlier when I was in Bavel, which quite frankly is hard to defend. Now go to Eretz Yisrael, now I have literally a fresh start, right, with fresh air and fresh Eretz Yisrael air. So now I look at the same thing and I look at it differently, and now I got smarter. And I say Yorshei HaEim is going to inherit. All this is wonderful, but none of this helps us because, in other words, we still don't know what's the compelling reason. Meaning we don't know who died first in the building, and now Rabbi Akiva says, okay, so one of them is going to get it. We don't know which one. Rabbi Akiva didn't say. And now Rabbi Zera goes from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Zera changes his position, and now he concludes that this is the smarter position, says Rabbi Zera, that Yorshei HaEim should get it. And it only begs the question, why? Why should Yorshei HaEim get it? What is the compelling reason? That's the Gemara's next line. V'tayim amai, amar Abaye, ho v'chuzak nachlaka ba'oso shevet. So Abaye says, because let's consider. If the estate were to move to the son and the Yorshei HaBen, effectively what has happened, assuming we're talking about property, so now you know what happened? What happened is, or not what definitively happened, but what could happen, is that the son is a different shaven than that of his mother. Right? In other words, remember, in terms of tribal intermarriage, prohibited only for the first generation, but once you go into Eretz Yisrael, it's allowed. Now is feasible that when you have a mother and her son, the mother is coming from one shevet. Her property, her ancestral property is coming from one shevet, and meanwhile, her son's a different shevet. And now we have a scenario where the building fell and on the both of them, and we don't know which side first. And now it's a question of, well, who has the better claim of we should be keeping that property? Her family says, Abaye explaining Reb Zera as to the opinion of Rebbe Akiva. And that is because when you keep the property in her family, you're maintaining it within the Shevet. Maintaining is basically chazaka. That's status quo. As opposed to if we were to rule that the property should go from the mother to her son. So if they are of different shvatim, which is possible, so then you're moving a property from one shevet to another shevet. So that's why when you're talking about what chazaka is in this case, chazaka means your she'aim should be getting it.
Is there any differentiation at this point? Obviously not of the maluk and the bar.
No, because that is only between husband and wife. That's not between mother and son. Mother and son don't have such a relationship. Don't have such a financial relationship. Okay, Amar Ben Azai Chalukim Anu Mitzarim. The Gemara is just going to make one quick comment. Noticing the language that Ben Azai uses in talking to Rabbi Akiva. Ben Azai and Rabbi Akiva were for sure contemporaries, and at the same time, we also know that Ben Azai was a student of Rabbi Akiva. Now, it's a little bit difficult to understand just simply the language that Ben Azai uses when addressing Rabbi Akiva, because he's talking to him almost like second person. Not almost. I could say it even better. He's talking to him in second person. And that's what the Gemara is commenting on right now. Meaning that Ben Azai is a student of Rabbi Akiva, but yet at the same time, look at the way they're talking to one another, and Amra Rabbi Simlai, Ada Amra, on this it said, Ben Azai Tamid Chaver to Rabbi Akiva. He was a student of Rabbi Akiva, and then ultimately he becomes a Tamid Chaver, which means that a student that turned into more like a colleague of Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because because the word that he uses, the language that he uses, that you're coming, right? In other words, he's talking to him like I talk to a friend. I say the word you. If I'm talking to a Rav, I should say, right? I'm not sure if I'm always good about it, but I should say, you know, does the Rav think? In other words, they should talk more formally, like in third person. So the fact that you see that Ben Azai is addressing Rabbi Akiva directly means that even though they started off as a Rabbi Talmud, but eventually Ben Azai elevated to the point of being a Talmud Chaver. Okay. Next. The rest of today's daf, or I should say the majority of the rest of today's daf, is all going to be predicated on the next statement of the Gemara. Shach mitam. So, they sent it from there, of course, meaning Eretz Yisrael, meaning that there was some ruling that comes out of Eretz Yisrael. And we're going to read and we're going to translate and we're not going to understand. Now, obviously, that's not why we're here. We're here so that we can read, translate, and hopefully understand. That's generally speaking the purpose of us being here, at least in terms of learning. But it is a very cryptic statement that's being made, and what the Gemara will be doing for the majority of the remainder of today's daf is trying to decipher this statement made that came in from Eretz Yisrael. So first, let's get familiar with the statement. Shalach mitam, they sent the following over there from Eretz Yisrael. Ben Shalava, benichse aviv. If I have a son who borrowed the assets of his father, bechaye aviv, in the lifetime of his father, umeis beno, and then the son dies, motzi miyad meluku. So then what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to extract it from anyone who bought the property. And this is very difficult to understand when it comes to monetary law. Now, it's very difficult to understand, meaning that was the that's part of the statement. Right? So what I just read now is the entirety of the statement that comes in from Eretz Yisrael. So when the statement ends off by saying, and this is difficult to understand, what it means is that once you understand what's being said, you're going to have a very difficult time understanding it. But we're not even at step one. We don't even understand what's being stated. So we can't say I don't understand when quite frankly, we don't even understand what the statement is. I'm going to read it again, just one more time, so that again we become comfortable with the cryptic statement. Ben Shalava Benechse Aviv, a son borrows from the estate of the father, Bechaye Aviv, in the lifetime of the father, Umeis, and then he dies. The son can take it away from the buyers. And this is a very difficult halacha to understand. So right now, we don't even understand what we don't understand. Okay? I hate to sound so smart today, but so right now we literally don't know. We have such a difficult time understanding this. Now, lava, my mafik. So the Gemara says, well, if he borrowed, so then what is he extracting? Va'od, lekuchos me'avirate. Where did buyers come into the whole picture? Like, basically, what the Gemara is asking is, what is going on over here? What's happening that we are coming to some sort of ruling? The lekuchos are introduced out of left field. Oh, you can take it away from the lekuchos. Who are the lekuchos? What are you talking about? So what is going on over here? Ela yidmar ha'chiyidmar. So the Gemara says, okay. So, the first thing we're going to have to do is just first understand the statement of this line that comes in from Eretz Yisrael. And once we understand what it's saying, then we can qualify and say, and this is really, really difficult to understand. But first we have to know what in fact it's talking about. The Gemara is going to go through five different suggestions in terms of what exactly the statement means. Here we go now, number one. We're on the very top of Kufn and Tesamad Aleph. Ben Shemacher Benechse Aviv Bechay Aviv. The son sells the estate of his father while his father's alive. You should immediately recoil and say to yourself, what is the kid doing? It's not his property. In other words, right? It's not his property, right? I sit there at the closing, and I confidently say to the buyer, okay, look, I'm giving you such a great deal, and the buyer's like, it's just out of curiosity, you know, it says on the title that this is owned by your father. Why am I sitting opposite you? You don't own the property. Your father owns the property. Like, what's going on over here that the son is even selling the estate of the father? So what's going on over here is that basically what the buyer is doing is that the buyer is buying something with almost like a conditional clause. Meaning, right now, you're not really the seller. It doesn't belong to you. It belongs to dad. But in the natural course of events, first the dad dies, then you're going to die. But when dad dies, all this is going to become yours. So effectively, it's going to be yours in a future state. And once again, we get back to the point of Davishala Bala Olam. Meaning basically what he's trying to do is effect a sale on something that's not currently his, but will become his. Okay, and we know, I mean, again, we've done this already a number of times, and we've hit this point here in the eighth parak a number of times. We know that ein adam makna davishala balola. Okay, but again, we're just trying to wrap our head around what's being stated. So ben shemach benechseav bechaya aviv. So he sold the property, and then umes. Now, not like he forecasted, where first dad died and then he died, but rather he died first. Now, what's his son? Meaning, it's three generations, right? Yaakov, Reuven, and the son of Reuven, the Rashbam, right? Chanoch. Okay, so Yaakov, Reuven, Chanoch, right? Three generations. So Reuven sold the property of Yaakov, and Reuven expected that first Yaakov was going to die, and then he was going to inherit the property, and then that's going to validate the sale. But that's not what happened. What happened was is that first Reuven dies, and now Chanoch, the son, then Yaakov dies, and now Chanoch says to the buyer of the property, "Thank you very much. I'll take that back." In other words, it never was yours. My father never inherited it. And that's what's being stated over here. So, and this is very difficult to understand. So the Gemara says, okay, so far we have now suggestion number one of what the statement actually is.
How did the sale go through, you said?
Huh?
How did the sale go through?
That's exactly the point. It didn't go through. It didn't go through. But in other words, at least as far as an attempt was concerned, so the sale was predicated on the fact that in the natural course of events, I will inherit it, and therefore, it's going to validate the sale.
Did Reuven or his son, did he misrepresent or was it forging?
Let's assume that there was full disclosure, full clarity in terms of what's going on over here. Okay, let's assume that. So the Gemara says, and this is really difficult to understand, so the Gemara says, now this is difficult to understand, to which the Gemara says, it's not difficult to understand. Your father sold, meaning we're talking about generation number two. We're talking about Reuven. Reuven sold it, and you, Chanoch, can just simply take it back. So the Gemara says, or my Kusha, the Gemara says, that's not so difficult to understand. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Let's consider. The orders of death were, first Reuven died, that's generation two, then Yaakov died, that's generation one, then Chanoch is there, and Chanoch is saying, who did you buy the land from? You bought the land from my father? My father was never the owner. He died first. Then my grandfather died, and you know how I inherited it? I inherited it directly from my grandfather. So my father never had any holding on the property. Therefore, he's not a seller. Therefore, you're not a buyer. Therefore, I'm taking it back. So the Gemara says, and the Gemara says, and this idea that in the absence of a father, inheritance goes directly from a grandfather to a grandson, the Gemara says, Pasuk Tehillim, Tachas Avosecha Yubanecha, that in the place of your father is going to be your children. Meaning that sometimes you can have things pass directly from a grandfather to a grandson and skip the middleman. Middleman over here meaning the middle generation. So, I'm sorry, I did not read the end of the pasuk. Tachas avasecha yubanecha tisisemu lisarim b'chol ha'aretz. You'll be like princes amongst the land. So anyway, but you see from the pasuk in Tehillim this idea that Yerusha can sometimes come from grandfather directly to the grandson, and specifically in the absence of a father. And so, with all that stated, if we're understanding the statement of Eretz Yisrael, the problem is the follow-up clause of, and this is really difficult to understand. The Gemara is now saying, it's not difficult to understand. It makes a lot of sense. So, Ela Ikasha HaKasha. So the Gemara says, okay. So now this is attempt number two. This is going to be a second suggestion of, what was the statement made from Eretz Yisrael? Ben Bechor, Shemach Rechelik Bechor Bechaya Aviv. So it's similar, but with a small little twist, and that is that the older son was selling property, property that belonged to the father, property that he not own, that he has not yet taken ownership of, and knowing that he was a Bechor, and knowing that he was going to get Pishnayim, so now he engaged in the sale of not only his first share, but his second share as well. Shemachar Chelek Bechor B'chai Aviv, Umeis B'chai Aviv, and then this Bechor, again, anticipating that first his father was going to die, then he was going to die, but didn't turn out that way. First he died, then his father died. So B'no Mot Mi'al Kuchos, and now what the son is going to do, meaning this is now the son of the Bechor, what the son now is going to do is he's going to basically go over to the buyer and say to the buyer, look, my father never took ownership of it. My father died before my grandfather. Therefore, you're not a buyer. He's not a holder. Therefore, you're not a buyer. Therefore, I'm just taking it back. And once again, and this is difficult to understand. That's the last line of that statement. Dad sold it, and meanwhile, the son can take it away. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. You know the point we made on the first attempt? Can we be making the same exact point? Meaning, by what right does a grandson have to take it back? It's very simple. Because the grandson inherited it directly from the grandfather. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, is the grandson getting the double portion? Meaning, the father would have gotten the double portion because the father was a Bechor. But this grandson, is he going to be getting dad's double portion? And the Gemara... Excellent. And the Gemara says, "Umay kushi, duma mati amrami kovach avuad abba kasina, uva makam av kamina." So the kaimna, and to which the Gemara says, "Yeah, yes, that's absolutely right. That when the grandson inherits directly from the grandfather, even though it's a direct inheritance, remember how are we here? Meaning, how is he inheriting? I'm inheriting because my father's your son, and my father was a Bechor. So I'm in the place of my father. And as Ben points out accurately, the Rashbam points out, it's not the first time we're hearing this. We go back to the beginning of the eighth parak of the Masechta, and Benot." They received their father's double portion. So what he stands to receive is a double portion. So the Gemara says, right now we made a second attempt. The Gemara says, and
this is not direct. It was direct. They would have the same equality as others.
It's not direct.
They have to go to Reuben first.
Okay. Stay tuned. Okay, very good. So, the Gemara says, okay. So the Gemara says, I'm with you. Okay, so here we are now at suggestion number 3. So again, a cryptic statement that was made that came in from Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara knows that it is to be deciphered. We're just having a difficult time deciphering it. And the Gemara now is going to be going through a third round of deciphering the statement. Eli Ikasha Akasha Haya Yodelo Aidus Bishtar Ashalo Nasa Gazlan Venasa Gazlan Huaino Medok Saviadova Che Meidim Meidim. The Gemara's third suggestion now takes us totally out of the realm of Yerusha and brings us to another topic, and that is the following. Let's say you had a person who was a witness to an event. Alone. And at the time of the witnessing, he was a good guy. He behaved. And then, subsequent to that, and we all have Bechira Chavshis, we all have the ability to choose, and we all sometimes don't make the best choices. This particular person, subsequent to the loan, then turns into a Gazlan. Now, from this point going forward, his record now obviously is impugned. He can no longer serve as a witness. But when he actually witnessed and signed on the document, he was good. It was only subsequent to that he becomes now a Gazlan / a Rasha, and therefore he can no longer testify.
Isn't this one of the
Yom Kippur? Right, correct. That's the Gemara in Sanhedrin, third parak. Yeah, really good. What's in your coffee today? So in the third parak of Sanhedrin, so one of the machlokes between Abai and Rava is whether or not he is pasul l'mafreya. An aid is pasul l'mafreya. That's by Eid Zomim. All right. But this is just a regular Russia. It's just a regular psul. Eid Zomim may be a little bit more than that. Okay, anyway.
It is a complete statement different from Shokum Etam that we learned before.
Yeah, this is now our third.
That's what said before.
Nothing to do with your. Nothing. Not. No. Not. Never said. Not. To, has nothing to do with Yerusha.
but it says the shochum etam, what is it? Ben shiloh, shiloh menetzer oviv, b'chai oviv, where do you,
right, correct. Correct. All right. Agreed. Agreed. Meaning, you're right. That first statement almost has like, right, so what are they doing with that first statement? Enachinami. Your point is.
Never said that.
Okay, I guess, yeah. I hear you. So the. So the Goslin himself, who again at the time of the loan was good, only a Goslin later point in time, so he of course can no longer come into the court and say, yeah, that's my signature. He's a Goslin, we don't believe him anymore. However, a third party verification of his signature, oh, that's okay. And the Gemara says, and that's difficult to understand. So the Gemara says, so we're not going to believe the actual witness himself, but if there's a third party verification, that we'll believe. Gemara says that's difficult. And the Gemara says exactly how the statement, the Shalchum Etam, ends off. And that, the Gemara says, and that's really difficult to understand. And that's the ruling and the almost incredulous reaction of the statement of Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, "My kushya, doma kagon shehuchzuk savya do bebeizdin." So the Gemara says, it's not so difficult to understand. Look, we know that when it comes to the verification of a signature, kiyum hashtar, so it can be done a number of ways. One of the ways a kiyum hashtar can be done is by taking an already certified signature of this person and comparing it to this signature. So it could very well be that we already have another verified signature of this person who at the time when he signed it was not a Goslin, and now all we're doing is just matching signatures. And the Gemara says, and this is not so difficult to understand. Eli Ikasha Akasha. So the Gemara says, okay, we are now up to round number four. This is our fourth attempt of understanding the statement of Shalchum Etam. So the Gemara says, Hayodelo Edus Bishtar Ashalo Tipo Lo Birusha. So the let's say he had knowledge about a particular document, before he inherited, and now he inherited, which now means that he is a baldover. He is no longer serving as an objective witness, but now he is actually, he's a principal. He's now the one who actually owns the money. So who in Yochel Akayim Ksav Yado? So now that he's a principal and he is not an objective witness, so now he can no longer testify. And he can no longer testify. He cannot certify his own, he can't verify his own signature. Avalachim Yochel Akayim Ksav Yado. But if you get a third party verification, that's fine. So the Gemara says, "My kushya do mahachanami kem shechuk Ksav Yado beBeis Din." So the Gemara says, once again, we're going to say the same thing. What do you mean? A third party verification? It's not so difficult to understand. Once again, if we already have a signature of his that was already certified and all we're doing is just matching it to this signature, the Gemara says that would work. So once again, the Gemara says it's not so difficult to understand. Eli Kasha Akasha. Hayu Yodela Eidus Ashalo Nasne Chasno V'Nasne Chasno. So the Gemara says, well, let's consider the following. And that is that, let's say they had they knew testimony before they became father-in-law, son-in-law, and now he becomes the man's son-in-law. So who, in other words, so at the time of the loan he was not related, therefore could serve as a witness, but now at a later point in time where you need his verification of the signature, now he's a son-in-law. He can't testify on his behalf. He certainly can't verify the signature. So who ain't made Aksav Yado Vachem Eidim who And again, the Gemara says, so now it's that same oddity where we're not going to believe the witness himself because now he's a family member, but what we're going to do is we're going to get a third-party verification. That's okay. And the Gemara says, and that is what is meant by the Shalchum Etam. That's the statement. That already now, this is the fifth suggestion of the Gemara.
Well, I think it was true that just because somebody became a crook or became a thing, someone else cannot say that this his signature is...
Well, again, it's the argument of the Gemara is if you're not going to believe the witness himself, so why would you believe a third party?
Jesus, I understand.
Okay, fine.
But in this case, I don't see the connection.
Okay, the Gemara feels that this is it's unreasonable. The Gemara is thinking. And the Gemara says, and what are you going to tell me over here? You're going to tell me that, well, this is very similar to what we said earlier, meaning third party verification. That's not so difficult to understand. Once again, we'll just go back to a time where he signed something earlier before he was a son-in-law. It was already been verified, and all we're doing is just simply matching signatures, and that should be fine. So third party verification is not so difficult to understand. The Gemara says, "V'amar Rav Yosef, Bar Minyomi, Amar Rav Nachman, Af Pisha Lo Huchzak Sav Yada Be'Beis Din." So the Gemara says, "It happens to be that I have a statement made by Rav Nachman that even after he becomes the son-in-law, he can verify his own signature, but you can have a third-party verification, not even based on a previous signature, but you'll just simply have somebody else come in, look at the signature, and say, yeah, I recognize that. It belongs to that person. That person happens now to be a son-in-law. But if you have third-party verification, that's fine. So the Gemara says, Umay kushudom exeris melechu. De'il al-mehemen v'achrim mehemenan. So the Gemara says, And this may be in fact exactly a point. The Gemara says, I don't really find all this so difficult to understand. I think it's pretty reasonable. Let's consider the following. What are we talking now about? We're talking about relatives testifying about one another. You know, why can't relatives testify about one another? The Gemara's language is gzeiras hamelech. So the Torah's decree. Meaning the Torah says their relatives can't testify about one another. Do you really think this is a credibility issue? Hard to imagine it's a credibility issue. And the Gemara goes on to make the following argument. It's not because we're worried about somebody's lying. Moshe v'Aaron lechosam mishum de lo mehemnam. So the who? And now let's put Moshe and Aaron up there as our model citizens, right? The two of them are prototype model citizens. And now, can they testify together? The answer, of course, is no. They're brothers, right? Are we worried about the credibility? The Gemara is assuming, of course, we're not. We're not worried about that they're going to lie. It just happens to be Gzeiras HaMelech. The Torah says that witnesses cannot testify one for a... I'm sorry, witnesses. Relatives cannot testify one for another. Ela Gzeiras HaMelech hu shelo ya'idu lahem. So, achinami Gzeiras HaMelech hu shelo ya'id aksav yado lechosno. So, you can't testify for your father-in-law. So the Gemara says, so let's think this through now. If, in fact, the statement that comes in from Eretz Yisrael has to do with the fact that once I become a son-in-law, I can't verify my signature. There's something I signed before I was a son-in-law. To which the Gemara says, yeah, but you can get third-party verification. To which the Gemara says, oh, and that's so difficult to understand because how could it be that you're not going to be believed, but a third party is going to be believed? To which the Gemara says, none of this really, it's not that difficult to understand. The reason why we don't believe the son-in-law has nothing to do with his lack of credibility. No, in other words, in theory, in principle, we'd believe him. Just because he's a son-in-law now, he's more prone to lying. But we'd believe him. Again, Moshe and Aaron are they going to lie? No, but in the meanwhile, they can't testify for one another. What the issue is over here is that Gzeiras HaMelech. In other words, the Torah just simply says they can't testify. But if you just simply get a third-party verification, that of course is going to work. So the Gemara says, with all that stated now, basically we're at a loss, meaning an entire Amud of Gemara, Kuf Nun Tes Amud Aleph, made an entire attempt to understand this cryptic statement that comes in from Eretz Yisrael, and we set it up five different ways, two Yerusha, three with loans where the witnesses who signed off are no longer able to testify for one reason or another. We explained it five different ways, but however which way we explained it, we didn't understand the final line of the statement, which is, and this is a really difficult halakha to understand, quite frankly, however we set it up, it's not so difficult to understand.
How come they did not attribute any of the statements to anybody in particular?
Yeah. It's a good question. I don't have a good suggestion. Okay. Ela la'olam kedamrina mikara. So the Gemara says, okay, we're going to go back to our original proposal. And our original proposal really fits in with the language best. And again, so let's go over our original proposal one more time. Three generations: Yaakov, Reuven, Chanoch. Yaakov is the owner of the property. Reuven is selling the property, even though he doesn't get it yet. It's not his yet to sell. And he assumed that first his father was going to die. He was going to inherit the property, which will validate the sale. And that's not what happened. What happened was is that first Reuven dies, then Yaakov dies, and now Chanoch, the son of Reuven, says to the buyer, "Look, I'm just taking it back from you. Because it was never my father's and it was never his to sell." And to which the Gemara says, and it's really difficult to understand, and which the Gemara itself said it's not difficult to understand, meaning the kid's right, or the grandson is right. It was never the father's to sell. So, like, well, what are we tearing our hair over this halacha over? It's a very simple halacha to understand. The Gemara says, let's go back and let's now rethink this. And the Gemara says, and let's come to the following conclusion. The Gemara says, we're going to go back to our original proposal. And remember, we quoted that pasuk in Tehillim. And that pasuk in Tehillim taught us that there are occasions where the grandson is going to receive it directly from the grandfather, notably in the absence of a middle generation. Right? So in the case where Reuven dies first, so then Yaakov dies, the estate is going to go directly from grandfather to grandson and do not pass go, and not through the middle generation. The Gemara says, that pasuk in Tehillim, the Gemara says, I'd like to rethink that pasuk in Tehillim. That pasuk in Tehillim is not talking about Yerusha. The Gemara says, tachas banecha, tachas avatzecha yu banecha hu bebracha ksiv. That is actually talking about bracha. Meaning that the it's not a halachic statement made in that pasuk in Tehillim, but rather it's a statement regarding, I'm going to give you the following bracha. Look at the bottom Rashbam on this Amish. Shatzadikim yishlam banim. That when it comes to a tzaddik, so he'll have sons, so he'll have grandsons, liyorsham, to inherit them, but not financial asset inheritance, meaning in terms of being Jewish leaders, just like the grandfather was a Jewish leader, a tzaddik, a role model, somebody others looked up to, the grandson is also going to get such assurances as well. Has nothing to do with finances, has nothing to do with estate and assets. It just simply has to do with, there are certain assurances that are given to a tzaddik, notably his grandson will be able to also be a torchbearer as well.
How do you know if that pasuk is a bracha or a pasuk is a
bracha? Well, your question is excellent. First, my first reaction would be it's a pasuk in Tehillim. So
there are times that it's used for halacha as well.
Correct.
So
correct.
Every pasuk can be interpreted as bracha also.
Correct. Agreed. But in other words, Tehillim is not a, it's not going to be a source of halacha. It helps us understand a halacha, which is what we're trying to do today. But okay, and then where the Gemara says it,
no,
so
the end of the pasuk makes more sense.
Right. Well, that's where Rashi quotes the end of the pasuk.
And
right.
What does it got to do with that?
Right. Right. Okay. Well, me matzah samar bebracha ksiv. The Gemara says, is that really plausible? Aval le'inyan dina lo, and it has nothing to do with actual law. So the Gemara says, "Va'atanya nafal b'aisa lav al aviv, al lav al marisha, v'haisa al lav ksivas yisho ba'chov yoshe av omer ma ben meis rishon v'achakach meis av u'ba'chov omer ha'av meis rishon v'achakach meis ben." So the Gemara says, now you're telling me that this pasuk in Tehillim is not telling us anything regarding halacha. Let's go back to a mishnah. This is the first mishnah of the three successive mishnayos that talk about the building collapsing. And this mishnah is talking about the building collapsing on the father and on the son. So this is now going to be a perfect illustration of what we're trying to wrap our heads around. This idea of, in the event that the generation 2 dies first, then generation 1 dies, so then generation 3 is going to be getting it directly from generation number 1. So the Gemara says, now let's consider the case. The case was the building collapsed and we don't know who died first. So now, fall by Allah Aviv. I'm just reading the Mishnah again very quickly. Allah Marisha Bahisa Allah Suvasisha Bachov. Now remember that the son had also outstanding obligations, either creditors or or ksuva. So Yerushav Amrim Ben Meitzrishim VeAcharkach Meitzav. So the inheritors of the son say, let's get this straight. First dad died, then first the grandfather died, then dad died. Other way around. First the son died, and then dad died, and therefore that means that our dad never got the estate. And the Balchov says, no, just the opposite. First the father died, then the son died, which means that the son got the estate. So now, my love, Yerushav, B'nei Morishav, Achei. So the Gemara says, now when we're talking about the Yerushav, those who stand to inherit, we're talking about his sons, and Morishav are, and the ones who are bequeathing are the brothers. And you want to tell me that the pasuk in Tehillim has nothing to do with financial law and has nothing to do with Yerusha, and it's strictly a bracha type of pasuk. So now, let's even assume that the order of death was first the son died, and then the father died. Can't the creditor still say, look, I know my borrower died first. I know that. But now, the creditor now is saying to the surviving third generation, but do you know how you got it? In other words, you got it, I know, you think you got it directly from your grandfather. But the only reason why you got it is because you're your father's son. So the truth of the matter is that, and I know your father died, and let's even say your father died first. But that means, though, that still it goes from the grandfather to your father, posthumously, to you. So in other words, you're only getting it because of your father. And remember, your father owed me money. So can't the argument now be made that the creditor should be saying, hey, it belongs to me? And if all this is correct, so then what about the pasuk in Tehillim? That pasuk in Tehillim told us that no, that in the event that there is a first and third generation without no second generation, the Yerusha goes directly from the first generation to third generation. And isn't that what the kid now is arguing to the creditor? It never went to my father. It went directly from generation one to generation number three. So the Gemara says, and now if all this is right, so then the pasuk in Tehillim is making a halachic statement, not just a statement regarding bracha. So the Gemara says, lo. The Gemara says, okay. So here's what we'll do. We'll deflect in the following way. Yorshe ha'av is achiv. Marishav achid avua. So the Gemara says that maybe the inheritors of the father are not the father's son, but rather the brothers of the father, meaning that the case in question over here is not third generation. There is no third generation. But maybe the question over here is the one who stands to inherit are going to be the brothers, and the Morishav, and the one who is standing to bequeath, is Achei Davua, the uncles. If we say that in the Mishnah, so then it just removes us from our entire discussion of how to look at first, second, and third generation. And as a result of that, we don't have a Mishnah now to prove one way or another how to look at a Yerusha when the Yerusha goes directly from generation one to generation number three. Okay, let's quickly recap. We'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. But this is really the end of the entire discussion, at least from the Shachmitah. So again, we did a Mishnah today regarding the house coming in on the mother and the son, and two competing claims. The mother's inheritors are going to be claiming they get it. The son's inheritors claiming they're going to get it. Here, Basil says Yachlok, and Rabbi Kiva says no. Keep it status quo. Status quo says the Gemara. Rabbi Zera, after he makes Aliyah, says status quo means goes back to the mother, because keep the land, the property in its shevet. So therefore, it should go back to the mother. Then the remainder of today's daf, or we didn't finish it, but the bulk of today's daf has to do with a statement that comes in from Eretz Yisrael, having to do with something about the father selling a property, the son coming and taking it back, and what's going on over here. Five different ways to explain it. The Gemara had difficulty with all five different ways, but the Gemara then went back to the first way of explaining it, which is that the son sold his father's property before his father died, which again only begs the question, how could he do that? But okay. And by the way, for more discussion on this question of how can he do that, the top Tosfos on Kufin and Tesamid Aleph, the longer one, spends a lot of time trying to decipher how he can even do that. But he did it. And then first the middle generation dies, then the first generation dies, now the third generation is taking it back. And basically, to put it really succinctly, the question that really comes down to is, when a grandson is inheriting it directly from the grandfather, are we looking at it as like a direct inheritance? Or do we look at it as still his father posthumously still present in terms of linking him to his grandfather, and it's almost as if it's still going through the father when it goes to him? This is our basic question that we ask. The Gemara did not come to any kind of resolution on this matter, but the Gemara says that's what the statement in Eretz Yisrael is coming to speak to.